So in your teaching, what are some of the Web 2.0 and social media platforms that you use?
Well, I mean, two main tools, Google Apps, and the other is Edmodo. Yeah, Google Apps, Google Edu Apps is actually a suite of tools, you know, that comprises of things like Google Sites, Google Docs, Google Presentations, Google Spreadsheets. Edmodo is something I like to call Facebook for educators. It's essentially a social media platform that can be a walled garden and provides a safe environment for learners. All my learners are adults. So
what have you learned as a result of working with these tools?
I learned that I had to teach myself how to use these tools. I learned that initially I used to have the perception that a tool is just a tool. I can use it any way I want, and to a large extent I still believe that today. And I like to tell people that a car can be a very useful vehicle to get you from point A to point B in good hands, but it can also be a weapon to kill in evil hands or in drunk ones. So in that sense, a tool is just a tool. It's who uses it that makes the difference. But I've also learned that, you know, just as we shape the tool, you know, we use the tool in a certain way, the tool also begins to shape us. It influences behavior. I think it was Alan Kay who said that, said something to this effect. For example, you know, you can, an example of how the tool sort of shapes behavior. I like to use wikis a lot. Google Sites is a wiki. And it's possible to just create a course site which is very delivery oriented. You know? So if I am a very frontal, direct instruction kind of person, I can just provide readings, embed presentations, and essentially do very little to stretch myself, you know. But if I learn that I can embed other things in the tool, such as concept map, you know, which is open to both the learner and instructor to edit, you know, then that can influence my behavior to be more open with instruction, to let go of the teaching process as well as the learning process. If I learn that, you know, that wikis are essentially blank slates that I can allow and encourage others to edit, to co-create content, you know, then that shapes my own perception of who is the expert, who has the content, who knows things, who has the right to provide feedback, essentially who teaches. I think if you're open enough and reflective enough to learn, then the tool can shape you.
So I think you touch on the point of on the roles of an instructor and a student in the process of learning over there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what changes or modifications have you made to your lessons as a result of your experiences with these tools?
Oh, okay. Here in this case, I probably need to show you an example here.
Okay.
This is an old course that I used to teach. This is the one that I said doesn't really exist anymore at Site 2. And, you know, this is the welcome page. Yeah, I mean, just like most course sites, it just outlines what the course is about, you know, what some expectations are. I had five classes at that time, five concurrent classes at that time, so they are links to their course websites. And what I could have done, so this is an example of a class site linked from my course site. You know, what I could have done very easily was just link to content. Here are some readings, here are some of my presentations, and things like that. But I decided to give them greater ownership of this page. So here at the top are their class photographs. It also helps me put names to faces with these photographs. And here, in this case, essentially this is an outline of the content. You know, I could have said, you know, these are content that we will attempt to cover week by week. But what I opted to do is, you know what, we will uncover rather than cover things. So it's like a treasure hunt. instead of me delivering things about, you know, these five or rather these six topics, you know, what I did was I told them I'm not gonna teach you these things. You're gonna teach each other. But before you teach each other, you're gonna position yourselves as authors of this content. So they were novices, but I said you must become experts in topics like personal pedagogy, number one. Number two, creating a productive and inclusive learning environment. You know, next topic, managing teaching and learning activities, and so on. So they had to divide themselves into groups, as you see here. Yeah, they become researchers and writers first. They write the topic. So let me click on this, and this will link you to a Google Doc. It launches from the Google site. Yeah. And then what they do is, you know, they then have a team of reviewers that will edit, critique their work after that. So they take turns essentially being the researchers and writers first of a topic, and then another group, you know, kind of basically critiques and corrects the content, asks clarifying questions. The thing that I tell them is, you know, I'm not asking you to rewrite a textbook, because they already have textbooks, except the textbooks are sometimes decontextualized. These are some principles, here are some examples in an attempt to contextualize, but, you know, the textbooks aren't necessarily written with them in mind as Singapore teachers, so I get to ask them to rewrite these topics, you know, bearing in mind that, number one, you have to recontextualize it to the Singapore context. And number two, you must write something that's not too long. You know, bear in mind that you're writing this for your colleagues who need to read really fast, you know, who need to review very fast also. So the ownership was passed over to them to do this. So these things then actually became their textbook. So essentially, they co-authored their own sort of wiki books, yeah, wiki textbooks. Later on in the semester, when this was more or less done, you know, what we did was a round robin method. The round robin method means, you know, I basically get them to go from station to station, to skim the material, to pick up main points, yeah, from the material. This is simply because when you are assigned a role to be a researcher or a reviewer for a topic, you typically focus on two things only. Now, I researched this topic, so I know this topic very well. Let's say number two. And I was a reviewer for topic number three, so you probably know topic three very well. But you don't know topic one, topic four, topic five, and topic six. So this round-robin strategy was a means to get them to at least get an overview of these other topics. And other than that, obviously I got them to, you know, because they had researched the topic well, to teach it, yeah, using this as a reference, using what they've written as a reference.
To teach it in your class?
Yes.
During your class, yeah. Okay.
So, frankly speaking, I did very little teaching, and I did a lot more lesson design, you know. I was like the person that said, start, stop, you might be going a bit too far, you might not be going far enough. Just point people in the right direction, nudge them a little bit, answer questions, you know, where there were clarifications that needed to be made, things like that. Yeah.
So this is really deep learning for the students.
Well, I think I don't know whether I can say they learned it deeply, but they were definitely more involved in the process, and that is something that might lead to deeper learning. I mean, when you're assigned a topic, you have deeper learning of that topic, because that's yours. You know, you're writing now for an audience,
and you have to teach it.
Yeah,
to them,
you're writing to a slightly larger audience, and yes, you have to teach it, and because you have to teach it, you don't want to stumble, you don't want to misrepresent your topic.
Yeah.
But the writing process alone is very important, because this course wasn't designed in a way that required them to write. I decided to do my own version of the course, and typically they have to write an essay, and when they write an essay, it's an audience of one. It's just the instructor who writes, who reads and grades, and they don't get any feedback. on that. When you do something like this in the wiki, they are aware that the rest of the class can potentially read it. And because I have reviewers, a group of, you know, 4 or 5 is going to jump in and, you know, critique their work. Because they're writing now for a more authentic audience, you know, the attitude changes, the purpose changes. They put in so much more effort into the writing. What I used to be able to do was, you know, look at the revision history. Bear in mind, this was something in 2009. So between then and now, Google Docs has changed the richness of editing. So unfortunately, the revision history is all gone. You know, but I remember seeing, you know, 1,000 edits or 1,500 edits over a space of 1 week or 2 weeks. You know, I mean, that's a lot of editing, and you can see here, even though I told them, you know, you should limit yourself to about 3 or 4 pages, you know, some of them go beyond that, others insert images and graphs and things like that. You know, they put in a lot of effort, and here you can see some of their comments, you know, of the critiquers. They actually pick up things beyond just the content. You know, they pick up things like how to play nice online, how to encourage one another. You know, here we have a note of encouragement, you know, good job gentlemen, well done. Here we actually have a comment, you know what they agree on and stuff like that. So if you actually look at the other documents, you see, you know, different forms of interaction. Some write in line, some choose to use the commenting feature and whatnot. And it was a very enjoyable, I'll be blunt, a course like this is somewhat dry, somewhat boring, but it made it more involved because they had a say in the content, they had a say in the creation of that content. This course was designed to be delivered. I redesigned it to be created.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's a long, never ask an academic to talk, you don't know when to stop.
Okay, so you have shared a lot, and I just want to ask if you have any other tips or ideas to share with teachers in Singapore as well as beyond Singapore shores on the use of Web 2.0 and social media tools.
Tips? Well, I mean, I use lots of Web 2 tools. Okay, I think here's one tip. I think find something that's personally meaningful for you. I mean, when I started using wikis and Google Docs, it started off first with needing to write papers collaboratively, journal papers, research proposals, writing down my own notes and possibly sharing them with others. It started that way. Personal relevance, personal productivity, and just more efficient communication and collaboration with my fellow academics. You know, but as I use them, I realized, hey, you know, this is another way to, I mean, I can use this with my classes too. Basically transfer that collaborative writing that I was doing with just a few colleagues with the whole class or with students in smaller groups. So a tip would be transfer what you do from your personal life or professional life to your teaching one. Because you can kind of say that, you know what, I've done it, I've tried it before, it works. Let's see if I can scale that up. That's, I guess, one tip. A second tip is, you know, have fun with it. I mean, lots of these Web 2 tools are really fun and easy to use. You know, I think it's important to have a playful mindset. If you look at this website or any other website I use, you know, I like to embed YouTube videos, concept or mind mapping tools, sticky online sticky notes and all that. Polls, you know, survey forms and things like that. If you go to the main page of this @site2 wiki, there used to be a tool which has, this is how old this page is, this widget is no longer available. Okay. This was a live chat tool that, you know, I could tell them, hey, do 1 minute papers here, and they would type what they learned or what they were concerned about, and then boom, they would then walk out of the class. And it was also a feedback channel. They could ask any questions there, you know, monitor this chat area and you know, answer their questions. Oh, and by the way, this was such an interesting thing. The course would be over and they would still come back and and type, you know, because they just love chatting. But yeah, that's what I mean by, you know, have fun with it. You know, if it's a fun kind of tool to use, like the chat widget, then your learner is more likely to also have fun. And if you look like you are having fun doing this, you know, it doesn't seem like a chore, like, oh, I gotta do this, so I'm telling you to do it. If you carry that with you, you model that, unfortunately. So have fun with it, you know. I think a third and final tip is be open to small frequent failures. You know, someone had said that fail, F-A-I-L, is short for first attempt in learning. The first time you do it, you're not likely to get it all done well. You know, it can work well in your head, but then when you implement it, boom, you know, certain things don't work. But that should spur you on to correct the mistake, you know. One thing I used to, actually I still do, is I keep a record, a journal, in the site itself, you know, but it's only, it's like an administrative page only for me, that I can see, where I actually take down notes about, oh, you know, next semester, do this or don't do that. Right now, I do that in Evernote, you know, to kind of use those moments where I fail as actually motivations or incentives to do better. Use that as steps to success rather than as means to just pull you down or demoralize you.
I really like what you said about that, because I think a lot of teachers, they're just gripped with fear in learning, having to learn not just one tool, but there are so many out there, right? So I think I really appreciate what you say about having that approach, you know, to have fun with it and to see the value. And I think that would just reduce the stress of having to learn this and that when their mind is preoccupied with how much fun their students could have in the process of learning with these Web 2.0
tools.
That's
the other thing too, you know, not just how many tools do I have to learn. The thing is that sometimes you learn one tool, then those skills can transfer to others. You know, if you learn how to, let's say, edit in a wiki, then that practice is easy to transfer to Google Docs. The principle is similar, except that in Google Docs you can edit, you know, in real time, whereas in a wiki you have to take turns. But the skills, the expectations, can transfer. I guess a tip related to, you know, having fun and dealing with failure is actually to start simple. Don't overthink it or overdo it the first time around you try. I always say start simple, because it will become complicated later on. If you start complicated, then it's almost impossible to implement and follow up. So start simple, do something that's relatively easy, you know, and then get the confidence from the initial experience and then build on that. I also say start simple, but also do something different. If you're used to lecturing, don't lecture again online. You've got to change the pedagogy, because nobody likes sitting at a long, boring face-to-face lecture. Why do we think that they would enjoy a long, boring online lecture?